This is 89.9 WWNO. Hey, Mardi Gras, it's here. The day we have been waiting for to let ourselves go. Maybe you're doing a second line strut, catching beads and unmentionables from the endless stream of floats by truck. Perhaps you got up early and managed to get a Zulu coconut, followed by a toast to Rex, who reigns king on Fat Tuesday. Oh, it's carnival time, come rain or shine in the Big Easy. And we're going inside the arts for a bird's eye view.
Passing on different streets, people grabbing their hands, stomping our feet. Hey, Mardi Gras, here I am.
Grammy Award-winning singer, pianist, composer, actor, and native son, Harry Connick Jr. is celebrating the 20th anniversary of the crew of Orpheus with a new CD, Smoky Mary, released exclusively for La Crescent City. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Diane.
Tell me, what are your thoughts on celebrating this carnival milestone?
Oh, I'm so excited. You know, when I had the idea about this parade 20 years ago, I had a very specific concept in mind, and that was to have a parade that would include everyone in our city. I know they were all white parades and all black parades and all female parades, and I think it's great that all of these clubs and crews exist, but I didn't want it to be to the exclusion of a crew that had everybody. You know, like, I wanted to be in a parade where my black friends could ride and my wife could ride. So I said, why don't we try starting a crew that includes everybody? And so I got a bunch of extremely talented people together, very passionate people who kind of saw it, the vision too. And again, not to take anything away from any of the other parades, because that's obviously where we drew our influences from, and those are the crews that set the precedent for Mardi Gras itself in New Orleans. So we're deeply indebted to them, but we just wanted to do something that was inclusive of everyone. And so that's kind of how it started. So now it's become this big Mardi Gras monster, and we're just so happy to be celebrating 20 years.
20 years, it seems like it went by awful fast.
It sure did. It's kind of scary, really.
And Smoky Mary, this is the lead float in the Super Parade. It's also the name of your new CD and a beautiful love letter to New Orleans.
Well, I do love New Orleans more than any city in the world. I wouldn't be anywhere without my town and all of the great gifts that it's given me over the years and all of the people who taught me everything I know. And when our captain, Sonny Borey, asked me to write it, I kind of thought I didn't know whether he was serious or not. He said, hey, man, can you write a song called Smoky Mary Boogie Woogie Choo Choo Train? And I said, sure. And he was referring to our flagship float, the Smoky Mary, which is the train that ran from Elysian Fields to, from basically down Elysian Fields to the lakefront back in the early part of the 20th century. And I kind of thought of a story about an old woman laying in her bed kind of reflecting about when she used to take that old cold run train and pay 10 cents to get on and go down and hear Jelly Roll Morton. And so that's kind of the story behind that too. I just wanted an album of just party tunes, and that's what it is.
You seem to be in a very creative period. You show us many sides of Harry Connick Jr. on this CD.
I love to try to create things, and I love being in a headspace where I'm writing music and recording music. This CD is a limited release in New Orleans. It's just like a special deal for my hometown. I think you can get it online, but the actual physical CD you can only get in New Orleans. In May will be the wide release CD. But this one, you know, it's got some different styles on it. It's got some gospel, some funk,
Yeah. And these are all original works?
Yeah, I wrote all of them. I love, you know, writing lyrics and music, and then that's sort of the first step, you know, writing the lyrics for me, sort of defining what am I singing about. And then I'll kind of put a melody to it, and then the chords come, and then I start thinking, well, how do we want to do this? You know, do we want, what kind of groove is it going to be? Is it going to be a funk groove or a shuffle or like a gospel groove? Is it going to be a street beat or what is it going to be? And then you start thinking about who are the best people to do it.
Yeah. What are you hoping folks will take away from this musical experience?
It's just a good time. It's party music. There's nothing to think about. There's nothing intellectual about it. It's just put it on, let it roll. have a good time. You know, it's really... I mean, if you want to dig around and look for some symbolism in the lyrics, you know, there's some things I think are cool about some of the lyrics. But it's a party record. Just want to have a good time.
Laissez les bon temps rouler.
That's right.
Happy Mardi Gras.
Thank you. You too. Thanks for having me.
Harry Connick Jr.'s new CD is Smokey Mary. Colorful costumes are donned by African-American revelers, Mardi Gras Indians, whose history is shrouded in mystery. We go back into our archives now for a look at UNO Professor Al Kennedy's biography, Big Chief Harrison and the Mardi Gras Indians, which details the remarkable life of New Orleans Mardi Gras Indian and literacy advocate Donald Harrison Sr., WWNO's Fred Kasten, producer of The Sound of Books, has this appreciation.
Big Chief Harrison and the Mardi Gras Indians began for Al Kennedy with a series of interviews with Donald Harrison Sr. through the summer and fall of 1998.
We sat in the living room and we started talking, and those conversations carried on right up until the time he died, and then carried on with his family for years later.
What emerged from those interviews and dozens more Al Kennedy conducted with friends and acquaintances of Donald Harrison Sr. was a picture of a complicated man who lived a rich and interesting life organized around two central passions, Mardi Gras Indian culture and books, and who, with his wife Harist, raised an accomplished and community-minded family, including his well-known son, jazz saxophonist Donald Harrison Jr. The senior Harrison got his first taste of Mardi Gras Indian life on Mardi Gras morning 1936, when he was three. We're gonna take 'em
down now. When Wild Man Herman, leading Brother Tillman's gang, came down the street, it frightened him. The next year, when he was four, he waited all year for them to come again. And when he was on the porch, he saw Wild Man Herman coming down, whose stories live on as far as his acrobatics on the street and how he could clear a pathway for Big Chief Brother Tillman in the Creole Wild West.
Wild Man Herman swooped down, hoisted young Donald Harrison onto his shoulders,
carried him as a small four-year-old boy down the street, basically said, "You don't have to be afraid of me." And Donald said, you know, sitting up there riding on Wild Man Herman's shoulders was the day he became a Mardi Gras Indian.
Harrison's father did not approve of Mardi Gras Indians, but young Donald found a way to pursue that life, ultimately became Big Chief of four different tribes.
He found meaning, he found strength, he found spirituality. I only began to touch upon, even in my own understanding, all the things that this tradition meant to him. Even when he stepped away from the tradition for 20 years to raise his family, he never left it. And then later in his life, when he established the Guardians of the Flame, he set up what I believe was his enduring legacy.
A legacy that now includes programs that support Mardi Gras Indian culture and reading, which was a huge part of Donald Harrison's life, all the way back to his days as a Louisiana Weekly newsboy.
He was a child, you know, selling the Louisiana Weekly, and he started reading the paper. He started, you know, being aware of this other vehicle in the city that told the news about the black community that wasn't being reported on then. And he started reading the editorials. Now, for a young child to read newspaper editorials, that tells you a lot. But he began to be impressed with how words can touch you and how words that somebody else wrote yesterday or a long time ago can still have an impact on you. And then as he followed up that theme, he started reading a little bit more, but his reading really took off when he went into the Army. And that's when he fell in love with jazz, Mad Magazine, and reading, and philosophy.
After his Army stint, Harrison came back to New Orleans, married, started a family, began building his collections of records and books, and in the mid-60s, bought a house in the Ninth Ward.
That became the place where the Mardi Gras Indians came, where the jazz was made, where literacy and learning and teaching were all going on. It was a place where neighbors came in to use the library. It was probably the greatest African American and African history collection around. It was an amazing center that they turned this house into, as well as the daycare center that Mrs. Harrison had going to for a while till she moved it to Alvar Street.
When he evacuated for Katrina, Al Kennedy took his boxes of Donald Harrison material with him, though he still wasn't sure what he'd do with it.
But it was only after the storm, whenever I was sitting in the Harrison house, it had been flooded, badly flooded. All the books they treasured were in piles on the floor with the mud. Everything, the Mardi Gras Indian suits were wet, and it was just, and Mrs. Harrison was there, and she's such a strong, strong person. But, I saw this one solitary tear roll down her face into her surgical mask she was wearing for the mold. And somehow around that moment, I thought, I've got to do something with this. This is, out of all this loss, this is at least one story that we can preserve, that I can preserve because I can do it.
The result is Big Chief Harrison and the Mardi Gras Indians, which comes complete with index, bibliography, extensive notes, and photographs, including a striking cover shot by the Times-Picayune's Kathy Anderson.
This is really one piece of a 1,000-piece puzzle. This was an amazing man. And in the course of this process, he had me meet others. And you begin to appreciate the strong leadership tradition that exists among the big chiefs and the big queens and the wild men and the spy boys and all the others that are out there. And thinking that someday that there should be 999 more books that detail the lives of these individuals, because that is indeed the literature of New Orleans, the history of this time.
I said the wild man.
The Sound of Books with Fred Kasten can be heard Wednesday mornings at 7:35. You're listening to Inside the Arts on 89.9 WWNO. I'm Diane Mack.
I said your spy came down by the bayou. They went to talking that stuff for the Mardi Gras day.
High school marching bands have two main seasons, football and carnival. But unlike football season, where bands briefly entertain sports fans during halftime shows, carnival season is a marathon of long songs, marching, and discipline. It's also a time when the musicians, not the athletes, compete. Eve Abrams visited two of New Orleans' rival high school marching bands, McDonough 35 and Warren Easton.
Up high on the fourth floor of Warren Easton High School, the band room this week is a clatter of activity. Horn players Justin Smothers, Alvin Walker, Carnesha Tassin, and Alyssa Moore schooled me on the fine art of marching in a New Orleans carnival parade.
You gotta multitask when you're in a parade. You gotta concentrate on marching, playing, people screaming at you, touching you, everything. If you can't multitask, you can't march. It's just that simple.
We're marching constantly. Like, it's about 3 miles, sometimes 8 miles. It's a lot. My pants get looser for parade season. They do. After parade season, I notice a difference.
Everybody get to see you. Everybody on the sidelines watching. So you got to make sure you want your, make sure you're doing that.
We have a total of 15 or 16 trumpets. Or 17. I'm on the end of the line, so I get to, have the little spotlight.
You're constantly marching high, then you're swinging a horn, playing it. There's crowds, there's tourists everywhere.
Parade season is when each band just shows what you've been working on. Show which it's like, if you prepare, you're going to go and prepare. If you're not, it's going to show.
That last voice was Odell Causey IV, a senior at Warren Easton and the tuba section leader. Odell loves music. He says just talking about it and his band gives him goosebumps. Though the band's job is to entertain the crowds, Odell says the band's entertainment comes in the form of battling.
Battling is like when two bands line up in front of each other and they just play the best songs, best execution, best quality, overall balance between, you know, instruments and stuff like that. It's just who's the best.
These battles, or challenges, happen as bands line up to march in a parade. Trumpeter Justin Smothers explains.
Like, you see a band on the other side of you. We play, they play, everybody recording you. It's just crazy.
So then how do you know who wins?
People.
The people be like, oh my gosh.
Over at McDonough 35, band director Lawrence Rollins is working hard before a busy parade weekend. Rollins, who is also the band director for the after-school program Roots of Music, has been at Mac 35 for barely a month. It's been a tumultuous, mostly band leaderless year for New Orleans' first public high school for African American students, where band trophies line the walls.
It's kind of hard. I'm going to take a hit. We call it taking a lick this year. But it's a good thing because I told them, good football teams take a lick. Every once in a while, they take a lick.
And taking a lick this time will just make the band stronger for next time. Besides, Rollins, whose brother Wilbert Rollins is the band director at O. Perry Walker High School, comes from a tradition where winning is about more than a competition. Rollins says players...
Band directors used to hang out. You know, hang out and share ideas and share resources. That's what it was about. I mean, it was also a friendly competition, but at the same time, it was about one thing, and developing musicians.
Back at Warren Easton, developing musician Odell Causey, who claims his tuba section dominates the city, says these musical battles are anything but bloodthirsty.
It's all love. Nothing, it's not, no animosity or nothing like that. It's just, you know, we both love it. And then the love, just we just go at it.
This carnival season is Causey's last. Next year, he plans to attend Jackson State University and study music education, just like his beloved band director, Asia Mohamed. Causey says being a band leader is his future. He wants to give the love back. For WWNO, I'm Eve Abrams.
Down the bayou, they are celebrating the Courier de Mardi Gras, a Fat Tuesday run in Cajun communities where riders on horseback travel from house to house in hopes of getting live chickens or other ingredients to make a gumbo. Cajun painter George Rodrigue, known for his iconic blue dog, and now based in New Orleans, is cooking up an artistic idea to help youngsters with college scholarships. We caught up with his son, Jacques Rodrigue, who is spokesman for the George Rodrigue Foundation of the Arts 2013 Art Contest. Welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
Tell us about the art contest and how it came about.
We started the foundation 5 years ago. My dad's been painting for 45 years now. And kids across the country and across the world have been painting their own blue dogs. And so when we decided to start a foundation, we knew it had to be about arts and education. And so we looked across the country for programs to model, and we love this idea of having an art contest for the state. It's open to every junior and senior across Louisiana, and we give out about $45,000 in college scholarships every year.
To about how many kids?
It's about 20 winners. We have a junior category and a senior category. We got about 600 entries last year. And it's big, big prizes. So first place is $6,000 scholarship. Second place is $5,500. Third place, $5,000. Some of these students may not think they could win the whole thing, but even if you get 10th, 12th place, you can still get a few thousand dollars.
That's huge.
And it's great, yeah. And every year we do something a little bit different with our theme. My dad picks a theme every year. So this year's theme is really special because we've teamed up with the Louisiana Restaurant Association's Education Foundation. They have programs similar to ours where they bring culinary programs into schools across the state for juniors and seniors. So we started to talk with them, and the idea of making a cookbook came about. They said they could get 100 recipes from 100 of their member chefs from across the state, and we would put them in this cookbook that would be illustrated by our winning artwork. So not only is it a chance for these young students to get money for college, but they can be published in this national cookbook that'll be sold across the U.S.
And this is specifically for students of the arts?
our students don't have to major in art. We keep up with all of our students who have graduated and are in college. We have people studying business. Some are studying art, but some are studying math. It's amazing what the arts can do. The idea is not just about becoming a professional artist. You know, you can do anything, but as long as you have this arts background, it really bleeds into everything else that you can do as a professional. We want students to illustrate something that shows what the food they've grown up with and what the, you know, their meals and their family gatherings or what all those things mean to them. So it could be anything, you know, whatever. It could be a crawfish boil. It could be, you know, your mom cooking some gumbo. It could be anything wonderful that would look great in this new cookbook.
What mediums are acceptable?
So anything two-dimensional. So it can be photograph, it can be colored pencil, it can be painting, it can be even something you make in the computer that's digital. The size requirements is about 11 by 14 to 18 by 24, so nothing too big. And it's really a simple process. They take a photograph of their artwork and they upload it to our website. And then we have online judges that will judge them all, but they don't know what they've won yet. So we have this award ceremony where it's almost Academy Award style, where we announce each winner.
Now, when is the deadline to enter?
February 20th. So it's right around the corner. But it's a pretty simple process. So just spend a few hours and make something great, you know. A lot of times it's not about the execution of the artwork, but it's the idea of it. You know, you've got to pull on those idea heartstrings of the judges, and you can get through no matter what.
And where can they go for more info?
It's RodrigueFoundation.org. RodrigueFoundation.org. All the information is there, and learn about how to enter and see some past winners. It's unbelievable artwork that's past winners.
Excellent. So they got a few days left?
That's right. Hurry up. Get those entries in. We'll probably even extend the deadline a little bit because the deadline's on a Wednesday. Probably have it till that Friday, the 22nd. They're judged on three categories: creativity, design, and execution. And it's a 10-point scale in each of those categories.
Thank you very much.
No problem.
Jacques Rodrigue is spokesman for the George Rodrigue Foundation of the Arts 2013 Art Contest. Good luck to all of the entrants. Well, that's our show for this week. Inside the Arts is a production of WWNO. Our program is archived at WWNO.org. I'll be back with more ideas for your artistic palette next week at 1 p.m. when we'll go inside the arts. I'm Diane Mack. Happy Mardi Gras!